So tonight's class is our eighth class on Genjo Koan. Dogen was the author of Genjo Koan. He was a Soto Zen priest and teacher in Japan in the 1200s. Very prolific writer and teacher. And this is one of his best loved, most studied. There's several books on this short essay. So it's on page 49 of our printed chant book. And it was probably put in the chat for if you were here for the recitation. That link should still be in the chat. And maybe somebody can stick it in there again. However, you don't necessarily need to refer to the whole thing because we're just studying one paragraph. And I have, I will be sharing my screen for those of you at home. And I have a handout for those in the dirt sendo. A few handles around. All right, so this is the line which in our translation by Shohaku Okamura, which is the one that we recite, goes like this. If one riding in a boat watches the coast, one mistakenly perceives the coast as moving. If one watches the boat in relation to the surface of the water, then one notices that the boat is moving. Similarly, when we perceive the body and mind in a confused way and grasp all things with a discriminating mind, we mistakenly think that the self-nature of the mind is permanent. When we intimately practice and return right here, it is clear that all things have no fixed self. So tonight is discussion on the emptiness of self. And we will do small rooms, small groups at some point. So Mick, if you wanna make no fewer than three and no more than four, ideally people, groups of three. So let me, so I'm gonna share the kanji or the characters and the written version of this passage as Dogen wrote it, and then the kind of phonetic translation, and then character by character, what each of those characters or words could mean. I like to kind of deconstruct it and take it apart so we can play with Dogen's writing a little more and perhaps not necessarily be led so much by the translator's inevitable interpretation. One thing, though, I wanted to say first, though, that this this metaphor of the boat, like, I personally find it a little difficult to relate to because it's difficult for me to imagine being in a boat and looking at the shore and thinking that the shore was moving. I feel like I would know I was in a boat. But I thought a more meaningful metaphor for comparison for me is, I don't know if you've had the experience of being in a train, and if a train next to you starts to move and you don't really know if the train you're in is moving or the other train is moving, and you actually have to, so as he says, you have to look at your own, you know, the train or the boat in relation to something, you know, that isn't moving, something that, you know, the basis of it. And then you realize, I love thinking of that because of the disorientation, you know, where you're like, you think you're moving, but then you recognize, no, you're not. And it's like your whole understanding shifts. So that's what we're talking tonight is, a shift, that kind of shift in perspective about the nature of the self. All right, so let me give you a moment here where I pull up the Little document to share. And I will also share a link to this Google Doc if you are so inclined to just pull it up on your own. Of course, it's now it's loading. Okay, there we go. The link. Okay, so this is a direct link to the Google Doc. And then I also have a link to a PDF that lives on our website. So if you pull these up, then you'll have access to them even when we go into breakout rooms. And also, I think if I share my screen and you don't really want me to be sharing my screen, you can like, I think there's an adjustment, you can stop that and see everybody again. But let me share my screen for now. So the first part of this is really fairly straightforward. Making so I can see some folks. Okay. So Kito Fune ni Norite Yuko ni, when a person rides in a boat, me o megura chite kishe o mireba, if your eyes are fixed on the shore, kishe no utsaro to ayamaru, so you make a mistake, you think the shore is moving. Me o shita shiku fune ni tsukureba, but if you fasten your eyes on the boat, then fune no susumu o chiru ga gotoku, then you realize it's the ship that's moving. And this is like, then we get to a somewhat more interesting part here. So shinjin is body mind. So the Japanese are fond of, even shin often means just body mind, or means both. So they tend to recognize there is this aspect of kind of heart and body and mind, but they often just put them together. If they're going to refer to a person, they refer to body mind or heart mind. So that is the object. And when you distinguish, so honken, distinguish or discern or discriminate the myriad dharmas, so that's manpo, all dharmas, dharmas with a small d means things, all things. So that it's the myriad things, all the things in the world, whether we're talking about ideas or actions or beings or objects or whatever, all the stuff. When we discern them with a confused idea, then we go to that second, the next sentence, ji shin ji sho wa, so own heart, own nature, or self mind and self nature. Then we make a mistake, just like we've mistaken that the shore is moving, we mistake and we think that our own heart, our own nature, ji shin ji sho, is joju, always abide. So I'm thinking this might be the same joju as in the death and dying group, that there's a poem and you know, the Dharma Rain called its death and dying stuff joju. I could be wrong, but I think that is. Joju, always abide, continuous dwell. So we mistake and we think that our own heart nature is permanent. And then we're gonna be exploring the last two sentences more deeply later, but this moshi anri o, if, and I love this, anri is like deed plum. It's the fruit of your deeds. It's understood to be like your daily life or deeds. And then shitashiku, directly or intimate. Shite is do or make. And then kori ni, each within, or this inside, he is return, and soreba. So this is a good, it's translated in quite a few different ways, which we will go into. And if you do that, then mampo, all myriad dharmas, we realize that becomes clear, that's at the very end, akira keshi. And dori is principle, do is like the do of dharma, principle way, the principle, the fact that all myriad dharmas are not self. Wadi ni, wadi is self, and adanu is not exist or are not. So, so he's using this comparison to point out how our misperception means we assume our own body, mind, our own nature, self nature, joju, always abides. And this is not the case. This is a trick of the senses. Like, you know, watching that train move next to you. Another translation from Nishijima says, when we try to understand the myriad dharmas on the basis of confused assumptions about body and mind, we misapprehend that our own mind or our own essence may be permanent. What does this mean exactly? Let's set aside the question of what happens after death. So we're talking about, you know, we think our self nature is permanent. This can be the case even if we don't believe in life after death. So kind of set that aside. Our mistakenly thinking that the self nature of the mind is permanent is much subtler, more existential than, you know, thoughts about what might happen after death. It's much more a part of each moment for us. And this also is not about our perceiving our body as being fairly enduring, or our personality or relationships. I mean, we may not believe or claim that these things are permanent per se or unchanging, but it's not like our life is just a random flow of events and objects, right? There's some constancy to it. So we're not really talking about that in terms of our sense that our self nature is permanent. That's what, you know, we have a sense of constancy, and we're setting aside the after death part. So this misperception, this is something extra we add to our experience. So the only reality, the only thing that is real is just this, just now. Any thoughts and feelings we have about the past, memories, regrets, joy, points of pride, resentments, are abstractions. At the center of these abstractions is a sense that there was an I present for all of them. And in the present, we're often thinking of the past or the future or other places or other situations, anticipating what I am going to do or experience in these different places in the future. Any thoughts and feelings we have about the future, fears, hopes, plans, are also abstractions. And we anticipate the I will be present for these future situations, perceiving, experiencing good or bad fortune, deciding, acting. This sense of I is a narrative we've evolved to make sense of our lives, to learn, to take responsibility, to plan. And so there's nothing inherently wrong with it, unless we make the mistake of thinking it always abides. If we think it is, there are several characteristics, several issues about this view of self that are problematic. And I once spent a whole 3-month practice period at Tassajara where Rev Anderson was leading us and encouraging us to investigate our belief in an inherently existing self. So this is something that we actually, it's so in the background, right? It's like a fish in water. It's just so much a part of our minds and our reality that we don't, we're not, what are you talking about? Like, it's an assumption that we've usually never questioned. And it can be difficult to actually recognize and discern this belief that we're carrying. So here's some qualities of it. We think that this self essence, this own nature, is inherent. So inherent meaning existing in someone or something as a permanent and inseparable element, quality, or attribute. And synonyms are built-in, constitutional, essential, fundamental, implicit, innate, intrinsic, latent, natural. And intrinsic is belonging to a thing by its very nature. So we have this self-nature thing, which we don't even, once we even try to describe it, what we really think it is it a soul, is it an essence, is it awareness, is it whatever, usually we start to realize like it's actually kind of hard to put your finger on and grasp, but that doesn't usually give us a problem, right? The fact that it's actually kind of elusive and hard to grasp, but that doesn't mean we can't just rely on it every single moment. So we've had this self nature from the beginning of our life. It's just an essential part of who we are, and we'll have it until the very end or beyond, who knows. It's essential to who we are. No one gave it to us, and no one can take it away. We believe it's independent, as in not depending or contingent upon something else for existence or operation. Synonyms are autonomous, separate, self-contained. So I think we'll all readily admit that, you know, we do rely on other people and other things, and we're profoundly affected by others and by the world. So there's a way in which we can see parts of ourselves as being influenced. We can see things that belong to us as being influenced and interdependent. We know our circumstances, our bodies, our desires, our relationships, our happiness, even our mind may change due to various causes. But the one who abides at the center of all of it, the one who experiences the changes, the one who is aware of all of that, who experiences, who acts, who chooses, this aspect of our being is independent of what happens. That part will always be there, responding to what's happening. And another aspect of this, our belief in this self nature, is that it's enduring, it's lasting, it's permanent. Our self essence is always present. It's the same self essence that animated us when we were five, and it will be the same self essence tomorrow, 10 years from now. Our self essence doesn't disappear when we sleep or we go unconscious. It doesn't change over time. Any aspect of our life that we can point to and see that it changes, and we say, well, that's not our self essence. That's, you know, tangential to this self essence. Sure. That might change. But there's still something. There's something permanent and unchanging at the core of this. And this is like, I think this is a description that at some level we might dismiss or see through on an intellectual way. We might say, well, yeah, there's probably nothing that actually endures permanently and is unchanged. But we only realizing that intellectually. Experientially, we're all still very fixated on this belief. And all of this, you know, this description of this self-nature delusion isn't just intellectualizing. It's not a philosophy. It's not, you know, a Buddhist or Zen evaluation of the way the universe works. And, you know, we're going to prove like this is actually how the brain functions and this is how that's, you know, which would all be kind of fascinating, but that's not what the teaching is about. This is a truth of human experience. It's experiential. Each of us can experience that shift in perspective from thinking it's the train next to us moving to realize it's the train we're in that's moving, that shift. Each of us is fully, fully capable of having that, oh, wait a second. Things are not as I thought they were. So what is true? What is it like to perceive the self correctly? If all of this is a delusion, a very, very deeply rooted, you know, a delusion to which we are very attached. So what is it like to perceive it all correctly? So it's funny, because it's not like you gain a new view of the world and see some profound new reality you've never had access to before. And it's not like you perceive some other real nature of the self. Oh, now I see the true nature of the self. Instead, you experience a moment without that assumption of an I. That I you believe is fundamental and essential to who you are. The I, which is about reaching mentally into the past or the future or elsewhere and knitting it all together into a narrative. So when you perceive it, see the world without that self-narrative, then what? Well, there's the world, just as you usually see it. But suddenly, if it's as if it's in color instead of black and white. Suddenly, instead of everything being interpreted based on our self-interest, we see everything and everyone just going about their business all on their own. Our dissatisfaction with life because it isn't how we'd like it to be evaporates, because dissatisfaction is based on comparison with some abstraction. How we imagine something is somewhere else, or how it should have been in the past, or it could be in the future. So we don't see the true nature of our self-essence, because there is no inherent, independent, enduring self-nature. So the way the Zen phrase goes is our true self-nature is no self-nature. And this is fine. We are very, very real, just not in the way that we think. So how do we open ourselves up to this perspective shift? This perspective shift in Zen is called Kensho, or seeing the true nature of the self. And it is not, as some, you know, Zen mythology has it, that this is like one big enlightenment experience that you've had or you haven't had. There are some folks who end up, this shift ends up being very, very sudden and dramatic, and like, whoa, and it takes a while to integrate and understand. But there are also, for many of us, for most of us, this is a gradual awakening, a gradual opening up. Like to say, it's not necessarily that you're completely hoodwinked by this self-delusion, or you've seen through it and you've seen the emptiness of self. There's experiences of less self, right? Of not being quite as taken in by the delusion, of having moments where that sense of self is lighter. We're getting more and more of an intuition that it's not all it's cracked up to be, it's not all we think it is, it's perhaps more fluid than we thought. So anyway, this process of awakening to the true nature of self is Kensho. So just to briefly return to our kanji, because he's basically given in here, so if we make that mistaken perception, like if you're, on the boat or on the train, and you perceive things with that misperception in life, you'll think your self-nature is permanent. Then this, if daily life, intimate make, if this inside return, all myriad dharmas, self not exist, principle become clear. So Okamura says, when we intimately practice and return right here, it is clear that all things have no fixed self. Nishijima and Cross translate this. And I just like to share some of the different translations so you get a sense, like, not just Japanese speakers, but even translators of Dogen, there's differences. So Nishijima says, if we become familiar with action and come back to this concrete place, the truth is evident that the myriad dharmas are not self. Tanahashi translates, when you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. And an Abe and Waddell translation, very older translation, if he makes all his daily deeds intimately his own and returns within himself, the reason that the myriad dharmas are without self will become clear to him. So I came up with my own translation, which is at the bottom of the kanji there. If we make our daily lives intimate and return within ourselves, the truth becomes clear that all things are not I. And in this, in my translation anyway, the truth becomes clear that all things are not I. Isn't saying that we're starting from an assumption that you are all me. But rather, it becomes clear that just as you have this, you have no I, it's this permanent, enduring, independent executive I that I like to talk about. When you realize you do not, you are alive and well, and that is not part of it, and you recognize that is true of all beings, all things have no, are they are not I. So my question for small groups is, what does it mean to make our daily lives intimate and return within ourselves? So I can broadcast that. It's written at the bottom of the kanji if you have pulled that document up. And I can also paste that into the chat and broadcast it to the rooms once they are formed. And we'll take 10 minutes. And if you would please, first things first, choose somebody in your group to say, to share something back. And so the question is really like, can you just brainstorm, take a stab, grope around in your intuition, and if possible, grounded in your own experience of practice, especially those things which,
can I get up here, Maggie?
They seem to help you experience less self.
Give me a minute.
They seem to help you. They seem to help you soften your attachment to self. If we make our daily lives intimate and return within ourselves, and I add that ourselves, I don't even know if that's necessary. Just return within might be enough, but there is. In that kanji, kori is each within, this inside. So you're welcome to come up with a different interpretation than I did. All right. And y'all can.
I really like the concept of being intimate with yourself.
All right. So,
I'm sure I understand it.
Who would like to? You don't need to summarize everything that was said. Just one thing. One thing to share that, as the person who's reporting back, it's completely up to you to decide. What strikes your fancy is something that you want to share. Chris?
I thought we had a cool conversation, and we talked a little bit about the balance between finding the opportunity on the cushion versus what it feels like to try to carry that forward into the world, into day-to-day living, agreeing that it gets a lot more complicated when other people are involved. And I think that the thing that resonated with me was Sabrina saying, recognizing that every moment is an opportunity for that awareness.
Great. Thank you. Joan.
Well, this was difficult. It really was. And I'm just going to share what I, my take on it, which was Dogen's, teaching on time being. This is the way I've gotten closest to what you're talking about, I think. His teaching on time being, which I kind of experienced somewhat at the last retreat, that we had, at the Zendo of being present to what I am doing in each moment or in the moment. So that's like your time being there, and it's very intimate. To me, it feels precious. Maybe because it's, it is fleeting. I don't experience that all the time. But then another thing that Jeff brought up was more like, how can you, take that experience and, I'm not quite sure, explain it or whatever. But so my experience there was not, it wasn't intellectual. It was a real, what I would call just being there. So I, as far as being aware that that's what I was doing, I wasn't. I was just being there. Whatever.
Right. As Dogen says later, like, don't think that what you, what you are achieving is what you're aware of and your discriminating mind.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Bob, you're still muted.
Like Joan, this was very difficult for me. I'm still struggling with the concept of self and not self. And coupling that with the concept of the hungry ghost not being a particular person. I'm not a complete hungry ghost, but you revealed to us Sunday that there can be parts of us that are hungry ghosts, unable to let go of the past, unable to let go of the future. And I've been struggling with the concept that I would be a different self if my eyes were not blue, if my hair was black, if my skin did not have freckles, if I had a very tan skin. I would be a different person. I would be a different self. But I suspect underneath everything that there is a self that is so subtle that I have to really work hard to dig down, to sense deep into what I can understand, that self is underneath there, that it's more subtle and more basic. But I'm not sure I understand this, but the Buddhist teachings say that is not an enduring self, that there is no enduring self under there. Then if you believe in reincarnation, what's going on? I'm just totally confused, but that's for a later discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want Zendo here, Jen?
Okay. Our group talked about how in nature sometimes you can just for a flash forget yourself, and that sometimes it also happens when removing distractions and clutter in your mind or clutter in your personal life. And I guess we also talked about that can happen when you're letting the past and the future go and just be in the present. And realizing that the universe doesn't have a center, and that just like letting go of the idea of direction and time, I guess.
Great job. Were there any other groups?
Alet.
So our group, we talked about intimacy with the self and kind of framed it as like intimacy in general, and like how sometimes that can be really good when, you know, you're really like sensitive and listen and things like that, and are very thoughtful with your actions and intentions and feelings. And then how that can go really bad. You know, we kind of related this to like working, and, you know, times when it's been really hard for one of us to be intimate with his self, was when he like wasn't really intellectually stimulated at work. And so, you know, that kind of goes with like boredom and how that can, you know, hinder intimacy and things like that. But being intimate with yourself and rooting yourself back to, you know, your breath and things like that can really open you up to everything else in the world. And so, yeah, that's kind of what we talked about.
Thank you. I hope the, yeah, I hope the conversations were, I like to think about it as wrestling with the teachings. I think there's a Jewish story. One of the famous figures in the Bible, I think his name actually means wrestling with God. Anybody remembers that, knows that? And, you know, so I like to think of that we wrestle with the teachings, that we're not like, we don't walk away going, oh, okay, got that. And it can be frustrating and a little like, what? But there's value in just, I don't know, just picking it up and messing with it and asking ourselves, and who knows? And sometimes you'll find that these phrases pop up later, you know, later in your practice, you go, huh, I wonder if that's what Dogen meant about, like, you know, for me, this is, you know, how do I practice this tomorrow? There's going to be tons of reasons why my life tomorrow isn't going to be it. Things aren't going to be done. Won't have achieved what I need to achieve. All kinds of things going on in the world which aren't okay. And yet to live my life tomorrow, or for the rest of this evening, as if this is it. This is it. And if we really, really lived as if this is it, and I love that return within ourselves, or return each inside, somehow returning to, you know, our life, our weird, limited, pathetic self full of hungry ghosts and karma and all of this, that just, Israel, yeah, means wrestle with God. So, yeah, hope that wrestling ended up being beneficial. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you everyone for coming.